Truth Espresso, Episode 10.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truth Espresso with Daniel Minnick.
Hello, welcome to Truth Espresso. This is Daniel Minnick, your host, as usual for Truth Espresso. For this episode, we have, as usual, a very entertaining and interesting topic, but I would like to think that this topic is probably going to be the most interesting for a broad range of listeners. Well, some listeners might get a little queamish or squeamish or whatever the word is that doesn't like to hear difficult or dark things, but this episode is going to be about dark humor in the Bible. What? Dark humor in the Bible? Let's talk about humor for a little bit. Humor makes the world interesting. Without humor, everything would be kind of dull and boring. Humor recognition and creation seems to be something unique to human beings above any other creature in the world that God created. As a Christian, I would say that this is because we are created in the image of God. This keen awareness of humor that God gave us reflects an intelligent design of a personal creator. So then, humor cannot merely be the domain of the creature. God must be and is the ultimate source of humor. The Word of God, the Bible itself, gives us glimpses into the humor of our God. And the kind of humor that from God that we see in the Bible, however, doesn't come as knock-knock jokes or crazy crosses. Often the humor that comes in the Bible is rather deadpan, dry, or contains dark undertones. So for this episode about dark humor in the Bible, I'm going to provide six instances where we see some rather dark moments in the Bible that have elements of humor to them. I mean, when I read these things, it makes me laugh, even though it represents some very down times in, human history. Especially, all of these moments have to do with the children of Israel. Now, it's not because I have anything against the children of Israel, of course, but Hebrew in particular, the Hebrew Old Testament, has some rather dark, humorous moments. So dark humor moment number one, this is what I would like to call Quail Fail. So for our story of Quail Fail, we turn to Numbers chapter 11, and verses 10 through 20 contain this particular account. The people of Israel were getting sick of the manna that God was miraculously providing. They were tired of wafers, the taste of wafers made with honey. They wanted some meat, and they wanted it now. Moses heard the murmuring outside the tents and started to cringe. He started to get a little angry, and apparently at this time, both Moses and God were angry with the people of Israel. Moses complained to God for burdening him with a stubborn people who wanted meat. They wanted to eat flesh. God basically said in verses 19 and 20 of Numbers chapter 11, "So they want meat? Boy, I'll give them meat. Not for one, not for two, not for five, not for 10, or not even for 20 days, but a whole month I'll give them exactly what they want. They will have so much quail it will come out their nostrils, and they will get overwhelmingly sick to death of it. So what is this meat-induced sneezing? If it's coming out of their noses, well, not quite. This is the idea that they'll get so much of it, it'll make them sick, it'll make them throw up to the point where it's oozing out of their nostrils. Blah. So then God sent a wind that gathered such an abundance of quails that it was described as an area of about 60 miles in diameter and 3 feet high. That's a lot of quail. So the people were nearly drowning in this feathered food source. They spent about a day and a half straight without sleeping in their zeal to gather the quails and prepare to feast like they had never feasted before. In verse 33, while these meat-obsessed wanderers were just beginning to chew the quail meat, God got angry and cursed them with a disease that killed many of them. So, lesson from this dark moment, if you don't want quail, at least the threat of it coming out of your nostrils or being smitten with a disease or being angry at God, maybe you might want to count your blessings. Number two dark humor moment in the Bible, I entitled Left-Handed and Underhanded. So this is Judges chapter 3 and verses 14 through 25. Israel was in bondage to Eglon, E-G-L-O-N, Eglon, king of Moab, for a period of 18 years. And the people cried out for a deliverer, so God graciously sent them a deliverer. This deliverer was a man named Ehud of the tribe of Benjamin. So God sent Ehud to free them. King Eglon was quite on the heavy side, and he lived on food lavishly. Now Ehud, the deliverer, was a left-handed man, and so being left-handed, he hid his dagger on his right thigh. This seemed to be to Ehud's advantage. He was able to get into the king's chambers because the guards did not detect a weapon on him. So apparently the guards assumed everyone is right-handed and they only frisk the left side? That's kind of strange, but whatever the case, Ehud managed to get through security check. And so Ehud came into the king's private summer parlor to announce to him that he had a present from God. He sure did. When chubby Eglon approached Ehud to receive his present, Ehud quickly thrust his present, which was his dagger, into Eglon's large belly. The thrust was effective enough that Ehud could not even retrieve his weapon. He had to just leave it where he left it. According to verse 22 in Judges chapter 3, something quote-unquote, came out. Now, there are various interpretations of what this phrase means, but a likely one, according to commentaries that I've read, is that the shock of the deadly wound caused Eglon to lose whatever was in his intestines and soil himself as he collapsed into unconsciousness. Ehud then hastily left the parlor and locked the doors to give himself time to get away before anyone noticed what happened. And so, as the servants came to the parlor doors, they noticed that the doors were locked, so the servants figured that the king was relieving himself in private and didn't want any company. They were only half right. After waiting for what seemed like a long, long time, the servants started to feel foolish just waiting around, and So they found a key to unlock the doors and check on the king, see what was really going on. They found that he had indeed relieved himself, but for the last time, as he lay dead on the floor with a blade in his gut. And so I'm guessing that the moral of this story is, if you are a gluttonous king or something similar to that, then you might want to think about being wary of presents from God, I guess. Okay. And you might not want to oppress the Israelites. So, morbid or dark humor story number three, I entitle this one, What's the Point? And this actually happens not long after the previous one. This is still in the book of Judges. The last one was in Judges chapter 3. Now this one is Judges chapter 4. And so when Ehud the deliverer died, Israel needed another judge. This time, no mighty man rose to the challenge. So why send a man to do a woman's job? In fact, two women win the day in this story. So Deborah, a prophetess, becomes the next judge after Ehud. And Barak is a scaredy-cat man who becomes her sidekick. Now, Barak was supposed to be the next judge, but Barak is unwilling to try to free Israel from the iron hand of Sisera, unless Deborah goes with him. Apparently, Deborah could whoop Barak in an arm wrestling match. As Sisera gathered chariots for battle, God gave Deborah's forces the upper hand, with Barak taking her orders. There was a great victory, but Sisera managed to get away. Hey, did you hear about the one who got away? Yes, he ran on his own 2 feet to the tent of someone in Israel whom he regarded as an ally. He was friends with Heber the Kenite, but Jael, his wife, was in the tent. By this time, Sisera was exhausted from running for his life for quite a while. Jael, the wife of Heber, went outside the tent and said, "Quick, in here, don't be afraid." Sisera came into the tent and he lay down fatigued on a bed in the tent, and Jael brought him a blanket to rest. Sisera was obviously as thirsty as he was tired, and so he asked Jael to get him some water to drink. So she gave him a bottle of milk and covered him with the blanket to rest again. Then Sisera, while lying down, asked her a big favor. He basically asked her to stand guard at the door of the tent while he rested as long as he needed. If anyone asked if someone were in the tent, she should say, "No." Okay. Now, it's hard to tell from this narrative if Jael had been planning this or if Sisera's request was basically overstaying his welcome. Perhaps his demands kind of got on her nerves, or, you know, she could have been planning this all along, but whatever the case, Sisera quickly conked out and fell asleep. Man, this guy was tired. He had been running the marathon to get away. So while Sisera was asleep, Jael took one of the tent spikes and a mallet. She quietly snuck up to him. She carefully placed the point of the spike above his temple. Apparently, he was laying on his side. And then, thunk! His head was now attached to the floor. Yet, he didn't even notice this happened. He died in his sleep. Hey, if you ever hope the best way to go would be to die in your sleep, well, we actually have one example in the Bible. What? You mean that's not what you had in mind? So, the two heroes in this story were women. Deborah the judge made Sisera run for the hills, and Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite in the tent, nailed him. Literally. So, number four, dark humor story, is a rather quick account. I call this one The Supply and Demand of Madmen. So our account for this story is in 1 Samuel chapter 21 and verses 10 through 15. Now, there's a lot of time where David, as a young man, before he becomes king, while Saul is king, he's fleeing from Saul. Saul is many times trying to kill David, but David flees from King Saul to Gath. Remember Goliath of Gath? This is the same Philistine kingdom, and now David sometimes finds allies among the Philistines when trying to escape from King Saul. So Achish, who is the king of Gath at this time, actually happens to be aware of who David is. He heard through the grapevine that song after David killed Goliath. Remember Goliath of Gath? Achish is king of Gath. And so he hears about the song that some of the women were singing, that Saul hath killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. So, when David is aware that Achish is aware of who he is, David becomes afraid of being caught and harmed by King Achish. So, to protect himself, David pretends to be insane in front of King Achish. David starts to moan and growl and pretty much act like an animal. He scratches on the gate and he drools down his beard. He lets the drool just fall, drip down his beard as he feigns insanity. And then so King Achish complains to his servants and says something to the effect of, Do I lack enough madman in my kingdom that you've brought him to me? In other words, he's telling him, Do we not have enough need? Is the supply of madmen not enough to meet the demand for them? So King Achish tells his servant, what if this loon comes into my house? I don't want this creep in my house. Get him out of here. And so by pretending to be insane, David escapes the possible punishment from King Achish for recognizing who he is, that he was the one who killed their champion Goliath years ago as a younger boy. I'm not sure what the moral of this story would be, so I'll just let the humor of this one sit. Number five, humor, dark humor story from the Bible. This is the false god who needs a potty break. You might recognize this account from 1 Kings chapter 18 and verses 20 through 39. Elijah, the prophet Elijah, and the confrontation with the prophets of Baal. Elijah challenged the false prophets to a showdown of divinity. He said, if the Lord, if Jehovah, if Yahweh be God, follow him, but if Baal be God, follow him. The challenge was that each side would have a burnt offering with no fire lit. Whichever side's God answered by fire to burn the sacrifice, that would be the true God. So Elijah, being the perfect gentleman he was, let the prophets of Baal try first. They cried out to Baal for hours with no answer. They cried out, Baal, hear us, Baal. Come on, Baal, hear us, Baal. No answer. And so, after this morning showdown, think of this. Elijah had to listen to 400 50, I believe, prophets of Baal screaming their heads off to get Baal's attention. And as Baal is not giving them attention, they keep crying louder. I mean, I don't know about you, but that would be very torturous for me. But somehow, Elijah the prophet managed to listen to hours of this noise. So, around noontime, Elijah then started to mock them. He started to chide them and tell them to cry louder. You know, because according to verse 27 of 1 Kings 18, their God could be talking or pursuing or on a journey or sleeping. The word for pursuing in Hebrew actually likely means relieving himself, such as with the call of nature. So Elijah's saying maybe Baal is kind of an idle chatter and that's why he can't hear your cries. Or maybe he's in the restroom and, you know, so he's away and he's busy or something like that. Or maybe he's on a long journey and he can't hear their faint cries from far away. Or maybe he's sleeping and they just need to be a little louder, just up it up a notch. I mean, they've been screaming as loud as they can, but, you know, maybe Baal sleeps very soundly and very deeply, and he couldn't hear unless they really upped the ante even more. Now, what's funny about this is that these prophets of Baal actually took Elijah's words seriously and began to shout louder and even cut themselves with blades and bleed to try to get Baal's attention. Now, to Jews, Christians, and even Muslims, the idea of a deity worthy of worship who cannot help but have to visit the commode is a bit absurd, but to the prophets of Baal, this was serious business. They had to get Baal's attention, even if he was on the commode, to send fire down. So after the prophets finally gave up, Elijah ordered that the prophets pour barrels of water on his sacrifice to soak it 3 times. He even had them dig a trench to hold some of the water there because they were pouring out barrels of water. And what's even very interesting about this is that this was during a time of famine. So this water was very precious. Now, the fact that they followed his orders seems like they were very interested to see what Elijah would do. Since they were not successful at all their screams and cutting, trying to get Baal's attention, who could have been taking a potty break. Okay, then Elijah prayed fervently to the one true God, and God sent fire that not only burned the sacrifice, but evaporated all the water. So now, I think there could be a moral to this particular dark-humored story. If you worship a God who could be talking and not be able to hear you, if he is away on a journey and can't hear you, if he's so deep in sleep and needs to be woken up, or if he has to take potty breaks, then maybe that's not the true God. Last but not least, dark humor story number 6. And I have entitled this one, "The King is Dead, Long Die the King." 2 Chronicles chapter 21 records the 8-year reign of King Jehoram, the king of the southern kingdom of Judah. This is during the time of the divided kingdom, where the northern kingdom of Israel was divided from the southern kingdom of Judah, and there are promises in the Bible that the kingdoms would eventually be united. So now, King Jehoram was a rather brutal king. He did not live after the semi-good deeds that his father Jehoshaphat did, or of his father Asa, or of King David, and so on. Jehoram decided to be a brutal king who killed some of his own family members. He apparently lacked good foreign policy and just decided to attack the Edomites to expand his kingdom. Now, if the Israelites left the Edomites alone, because the Edomites were basically their cousins, God did promise to bless the Edomites. Not like he would bless Israel, but basically the idea was that the Israelites and the Edomites would leave each other alone. So, because Jehoram decided to do an aggressive preemptive attack on the Edomites to try to expand his kingdom, the Edomites became enemies of Judah for a very long time because of this. And so, because of that pain of those bad foreign relations, the people in the kingdom of Judah were probably not too happy with Jehoram's reign of terror, and neither was God. So God judged Jehoram with 2 years of a painful terminal intestinal disease. So after 2 years, King Jehoram slowly and painfully succumbed to this intestinal disease. Now, what's funny about this account, at the end of chapter 21, 2 Chronicles 21 in verse 20, the scribe, writing down this account, made sure to mention that when King Jehoram passed away, he was not missed, and no one cared. You know, it's kind of dark to read that, but when you see the account of King Jehoram, it's easy to understand why the scribe would just take it upon himself to write, and knowingly write, that basically the kingdom was with him on this regard. He passed away. Jehoram passed away, and he was not missed. No one cared. So, these are not the only instances of humor in the Bible, or even dark humor in the Bible, but I'm hoping that the quail fail of the Israelites, the man Ehud who is left-handed and underhanded, the two women who won the day, and Jaal, who really answered the question, what's the point? The supply and demand of madmen, with David pretending to be insane. The false god of Baal, who needs to take a potty break. And King Jehoram, who the people really appreciated the fact that he died. They didn't care that he died from a rather painful disease, because he deserved it. I hope all of these stories really got you thinking about the Bible, even as, you know, a work of literature. Now, of course, I believe that the Word of God is the inerrant, infallible, inspired Word of God. And so when I come to stories like these that make me chuckle, but they also have this unsettling feeling that the God, the one true God that we worship, has a kind of dark, humored side to him. He can be deadpan in how he inspires his word, and well, we have to ask the question, if God is the creator and we can have dark humor, and, you know, if dark humor does reflect the righteousness of God, then God is the source of dark humor. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Truth Espresso. Stay tuned for other interesting and excited, but maybe not necessarily dark humored episodes in the future, but I'm sure some of those will come in due time.
Thank you for waking up with Truthspresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truthspresso, I would really appreciate it if you would rate it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever application you use to listen to Truthspresso.